7BR Part Heard. Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. We're back today for part three of our inquest series. If you missed part one and part two of the series, you can find these on Chambers' website and your usual streaming platforms such as Spotify and Apple Music. In this series, we've been focusing on the newly published book, Coroner's Investigations and Inquests. The book has been co-authored by members of 7BR and other leading inquest solicitors and is available to purchase as an electronic copy or a hard copy as of today. We are joined by 7 Bedford Row member James Weston. James practices in the field of clinical negligence and abuse and social services claims. Within his areas of expertise, he regularly appears at inquests representing families, local authorities, and institutional clients. He has particular expertise as regards death in state detention, whether that be prisons, police custody, or psychiatric units. James, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Rhys.
Well, firstly, congratulations on your book being published. As I said, it's out today. Your new book, Coroner's Investigations and Inquests. You must be quite excited for that.
Yeah, very excited. We think that with the assistance of all our excellent contributors, we have produced something authoritative and quite unique. Not only does the book provide an up-to-date and compendious analysis of the law, it's designed with the practitioner in mind. It seeks to examine each stage of the coronial investigation in detail and also provides a practical guides in many of the distinct areas that the inquests can cover.
And the topic of today's episode is deaths in custody. Now, before we go into this subject, I just wanted to ask you, what led you into doing inquests?
Well, there are few legal processes that are more fundamentally important than understanding why members of society have suffered unnatural deaths. I've been doing inquests for over a decade now, and whether I'm acting for a family or an institutional client, I feel that I'm contributing to something that is in the public interest. And from a professional perspective, I enjoy the free-form challenge of an inquest, and particularly the opportunity to work with juries.
One of the chapters that you've authored is deaths in state detention. Why is that something that you in the book have focused upon?
Well, Rhys, inquests are so important in this area. By their nature, deaths in custody happen behind closed doors. The public scrutiny that coronial investigations place on such fatalities shines a light on an area that can often seem rather opaque. And the other thing to keep in mind is that it's the state that's doing the detaining. For whatever reason somebody's in custody, we as a society are, in exchange for restricting their liberty, undertaking to be custodians of their security, welfare, and medical needs. The way in which we treat such vulnerable people, whether they be in prison or psychiatric units, is really a test of the sort of society we are. A rigorous level of investigation is therefore always vital.
I can imagine that sort of emotions must run quite high in these sorts of inquests that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever there's a grieving family involved, emotions are always high. And when you add to that the concern a family might have that their loved one may have died as a result of the conduct of officers of an institution behind closed doors and away from their family, that only becomes heightened. And on the other side, you have prison officers, psychiatric nurses, clinicians, or whatever it may be, that are worried about being blamed for a death and concerned as regards the professional, criminal, and personal consequences that might follow a coronial investigation.
And does the book touch upon how to manage these sort of emotive proceedings?
Yeah, absolutely, it does. I mean, it sounds rather straightforward, but the starting point has to be to recognize that you are dealing with those sorts of emotive proceedings and the issues that are at play. Time with your client or with your client's witnesses is important. You need to explain the way in which the proceedings are going to pan out. This engenders confidence in the process itself and in your ability as an advocate to guide them through it. Allowing witnesses for institutions to know they're not on trial is also important. And managing expectations of families when you're on the other side is critical. One of the chapters of the book deals specifically with representing families. And I think you heard from Richard and Linda last week on this. Families need to understand what can and cannot be achieved by the investigation. Otherwise, you risk an already grieving family feeling even more let down at the end of the process.
Of course. Now, whilst on the face of it, deaths in custody is an easy term for people to understand, both those with legal knowledge and those without. Could you perhaps expand on what this means in reality and tell us what the most common types of fatal incidents with which inquests are concerned.
Well, the first thing to, I think, appreciate is that deaths in custody doesn't just mean deaths in prison. They can be in police custody and often, sadly, as well, on psychiatric units. Over a quarter of all deaths in custody are self-inflicted. Such fatalities are subject to Article 2 jury inquests and, unfortunately, are a reasonably regular occurrence. Less commonly, inquests may touch upon the use of force by officers. There was an example last week, the inquest into the death of Leon Briggs, in which the jury returned a rider of neglect. And then there's also deaths involving medical type negligence issues. These can be as regards clinical misjudgment or misdiagnoses, a sort of more sort of standard medical style inquest, but they can also involve more practical issues which occur within custody, such as giving a patient medication, supervising their basic health needs, and conveying them to appointments, which unfortunately can often be a problem in prisons.
You mentioned deaths involving self-harm or suicide are the most common form of deaths in custody with which inquests are concerned. What sort of issues will an inquest go into in that type of investigation?
Well, risk management is usually the starting point, Rhys. Was there a care plan or was there a risk assessment? Did it abide by the local or national guidelines? Was there sufficient background information obtained? Was there engagement with the detainee, their friends and their family? Were other records, such as clinical records, considered, and were other professionals and bodies contacted to ensure the right sort of multidisciplinary approach? Was the level of risk and observations properly categorized? Were relevant triggers or suicide signatures identified? But the mere formulation of a plan, of course, is not in itself enough. It's just a starting point. Plans have to be put into action. Observations need to be undertaken. Internal communication is also important. Were handovers done properly? Were there sufficient staff on shift at the relevant times? And of course, it's got to be kept in mind that risk assessments are not just snapshots. They need to be updated as risks evolve. And beyond risk management, the focus will often be upon property management and environmental issues. In hanging cases, the source and point of any ligature are irrelevant. And questions have to be answered as to whether there were sufficient property restrictions, checks and searches in place to reasonably try and prevent the death and the hanging in itself. And another issue that sadly often comes up is whether the emergency response of officers to very acute events was done sufficiently quickly or not.
Presumably, then, the fault is attributed to one or more individuals or organisations.
Well, a coroner's inquest is specifically prohibited from blaming individuals. That is not its role. But in an Article 2 inquest, it is open to a jury to detail specific failures that have or may have contributed to the death. Such conclusions don't bind a civil court, but they can often be the basis for a civil claim in negligence or under the Human Rights Act after the coronial proceedings have concluded.
And is this something that is provided within the book?
Yeah, it's all in there, Rhys, absolutely.
Well, thank you, James, for coming on the podcast today and sharing your insight. It's been a pleasure having you on. Congratulations once again on the book. Where can your listeners find it?
Well, it's available through LexisNexis. A link to their website can be found alongside this podcast and also on the 7BR website.
Thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of 7BR's Part Heard. Join us next week for the final chapter of this series, where we are joined by seven Bedford Row members, Jim Rowbottom and Sir John Goldring. To listen to previous episodes of this series or other podcasts from our members, you can find all episodes on Chamber's website. We're now also available on other streaming platforms such as Spotify and Apple Music. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.